Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hey guys, Jesse Green here. Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Today, I'm absolutely pumped to be having a conversation with Alexi Nikolaos. Alexi is both a content writer and a copywriter, and I know many people use the words interchangeably, but there is absolutely a difference. Alexi has been responsible for some of the most successful advertising campaigns in Australia's history. He has worked with some of the greats, and he's been invited to things such as the Berkshire Hathaway annual general meeting by Warren Buffett himself. He's worked with the founder of the UFC. He's been involved with Simon Reynolds and helping him with projects as well. And Alexi is just one of those guys who is really well known in the marketing world as an absolute guru at what he does. And in this conversation, Alexi is sharing some of his really great copywriting and content writing tips and tricks, because we all know that creating content is an important part of our marketing program. It establishes authority. We look at what happens at various points in the marketing funnel. And Alexi provides some really useful strategies to be able to help people move through that marketing funnel in a way that's elegant and smooth, and ultimately to get new patients for your practice. So in this particular episode is jam-packed with marketing gold. But without any further ado, I bring you Alexi. Alexi, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Thanks so much for taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us here. How's things in Sydney Town?
Sydney Town is phenomenal. I'm looking out of my view. It's blue skies, and I am planning at what point of the day I'm going to be out in the sun to relax and get those vitamin D's.
Yeah, get a few gammas. Yeah, lovely. Yeah. Well, fantastic. Sydney is probably my favourite city on the planet, so it's always a wonderful spot to be. Alexi, I've been following your career now for, I don't know, it feels like a lot of years. So I'm the guy that pops up in your Facebook feed from time to time and has a look at what you're doing. And what I've noticed over the years is, you know, you've consistently been producing content, producing copy, and everywhere I turn, you know, if someone's asking for a content writer or a copywriter, invariably your name comes up in conversation. You've worked with some of the biggest names in the industry in terms of copywriting. You've pivoted from copy to content, and there's obviously a close relationship to that. I'm just curious, how does one set about becoming a content writer or copywriter? It doesn't feel like something you put on your career form at the end of year 12. How did you find your way into that career path?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because at the end of year 12, my English score was 52%. and I did not like writing essays, at least those sorts of essays in English. I enjoyed economics. You know, I fell into it. So the background is, I got out of school, went into uni, got bored of uni, went into business, and the very first thing I did in business was door-to-door selling, literally hitting the pavement, speaking to 300 people a day, walking with calculators and cigarette lighters and all that sort of stuff, hearing many, many no's. But on the first day out, my trainer said, "Don't return until you sell out all your merchandise." And so, you know, that's actually what happened. I actually sold out all my merch on the first day. I got back early. I walked in the door and he said, what are you doing here? I told you, don't come back until you sell all your merch. And it was tongue in cheek for him. He was kidding. No one ever sells their merch on their first day. So I sold out all on the first day, got back in early, and he was like, "Oh my God, wow." So for me, it was a nice reference point that I enjoy certain things. And one of those is understanding the human condition, understanding what makes people tick, what makes people buy, say yes, say no, et cetera, et cetera. But speaking to 300 people a day, day in, day out, it burnt me out pretty big time. I'm innately introverted rather than extroverted, so I do like my alone time. And so fast forward about a year, year and a half, I find myself with time on my hands. And I just started reading Jay Abraham's, back then, special reports. He didn't have any books back then. Bumped into a guy called Gary Halbert, he's passed away now, but a very influential copywriter back then, and a few other names, and time on my hands. I studied all their stuff, and time passes. I start to acquire some knowledge, and I heard many, many times, if you want to be a great copywriter, write other people's copy in your own handwriting. I didn't care to be a great copywriter. I just had time on my hands. So I just did that. And amazingly, I started improving my articulation of sentences, just the transitions, the quality of my writing. Accidentally, there was no intention behind any of this, just started improving until a point where I actually noticed, I'm like, this isn't too bad. I'm not cringing too much. And then, you know, I got my first client who at the time was Renee Rivkin. There's a whole story behind that. And I literally fell into it. There was no intention and no grand plan as it relates to copywriting. It snowballed bit by bit. And I started enjoying working from home, not having to speak to too many people at once, was still putting into effect my desire to understand the human condition.
So actually, when you look at your client list, it does read like a bit of a who's who. I know you've been invited to the Berkshire Hathaway annual general meeting. I also am aware that Gary Halbert, you know, is really taken with some of the copy that he read of yours, and I think he might have borrowed bits of it. So certainly you've had that understanding of the human condition. You've obviously been able to write to that human condition to be influential and to help in the decision-making process. So as you've gone through understanding the human condition, what is it that you think you've uncovered mostly about the human condition that allows you to be able to speak to people in such a way that facilitates decision-making?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It dovetails with all the personal development work that I've done too. It truly does. And why I raise that is because you need to get out of your own way. If you're a person who's very caught up in your own mind, that can only see your own point of view, if you're highly egotistical, which we all are to different degrees, obviously, if you can't get out of your own viewpoint, it's an impossibility to sell really well in any form. And so I guess what I've sort of been able to do to some degree of skill is really, it's all about the other person. It's truly understanding their viewpoint, their belief system, their values, their desires, their fears, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and really mapping out of all that, what truly matters most in relation to what I'm seeking to communicate. Sometimes we're selling a product directly and overtly. Sometimes it's just sharing great content, but great content, it does not happen in a vacuum. It happens at a point in time for a specific person's situation. And it's really, really understanding that. And honestly, it's you never get perfect at it. It's an impossibility. Like, you just continually sharpen that saw and just seek to understand more and more and more. And there's, you know, I'm never, ever 100% happy with anything we produce. If we had infinite time, maybe we would do the perfect message, but stuff's got to get out the door. So
it's a bit like dentistry. You could spend all day polishing your fillings and doing all that sort of stuff, but there comes a point when the patient's had enough, you've had enough, and you've got to be commercial about it as well. I did want to ask you around that seeking to understand people, because one of the things that I've observed in my career as a dentist and certainly in my career that I work in now is that seems to be where a lot of people trip up in their selling process as well, is they tend to want to talk about the features and benefits and, you know, why their particular service or product or whatever it happens to be is the bee's knees without fully really getting to understand the prospect, or in our case, the patient. Is that something that you, in that first sales job, the door-to-door, is that why you were so successful? Because you really understood the person well, what they were actually trying to achieve? And indeed, is it a common mishap for many people in sales?
Okay, so yeah, if we're talking door-to-door when I was quite young, no time to really understand the other person. It's all about an energy transference. Walking the door with that smile, high energy, and when you get the initial get the hell out of here type thing, you roll.
Is there a bit of performance in that? Is there a performance element to that?
Yeah, in that context, it's definitely about the energy that you put out. It's definitely about the vibe. It's definitely how you handle yourself there. And that's it. But that's what it is initially. And then when you get the initial get the hell out of here, it's adapting and morphing and not taking that personally, but actually having a smile and finding a way to joke about it. And that's a different skill set than the much deeper understanding of human nature required for, as a dentist, for example. There's some serious stuff going on in dentistry. Obviously, people are fearful, scared. It's, you know, they've seen some interesting studies on the degree of displeasure most of us have with visiting the dentists. right? So the rate's up there with fear of public speaking for some people at least. So that's something else. That's truly understanding and knowing how to disarm, build rapport initially, and then how to communicate to someone so that they start to build trust with you and your message. And that's really what's key with whether it's dentistry or selling big ticket items or any item that requires a multi-step sort of process where you can't do the one call, one close types. You need to slowly understand what that person's about, where they're at. Even more important than that, it's trust. It's about building trust. And that could be sending the letter in the mail. That's about trust, believe it or not. Or it could be when, you know, a patient walks in the clinic. That's about trust too.
I really resonate with that actually, Alexi, because we have a bit of a saying in our practice, and certainly something I teach, is when you meet a patient for the first time and you might look inside their mouth, it's a very intimate part of the body. Really, without sounding weird and dodgy, you are literally having your fingers inside someone else's body. And that obviously requires a great deal of sensitivity from our end. It also requires a great deal of trust from the patient's end and being respectful of that. And as you say, not wading into things too quickly, but letting the process take its time, letting the patient get to know you, like you, and trust you. And I really also resonated with the multi-step process, because one of the things that I see is if I was to meet you in the dental chair, Alexi, and I said, "Hey, Alexi, it's really nice to meet you. I know we've just spent 15 minutes together, but I want you to spend $20,000 with me on dental care." The likelihood is of you accepting that is pretty low. And so I like to tell people to slow down, to speed up, and ultimately you get a greater conversion. So, mate, I really resonate with that. I wanted to just also talk to you a little bit about, in terms of the writing that you do, I know you start off with the copy and studying the masters, you know, Gary Halbert and Jay Abraham and others. And of course, there's some great similarities and yet some differences between copywriting and content writing, which is a lot of what you do now. Where do you think copywriting and content writing fit into, I suppose, the armamentarium of a small to medium business? Where does that fit into the strategy, the marketing plan, and so on?
Yeah, interesting question. So how I define the terms, they are definitely closely related. So there's no doubt about that. Copywriting is usually in the context of seeking to make a sale directly. So the stuff that I've done over the years is crafting a message that for the most part seeks to get an immediate response from that one message. Customarily, in the earlier parts of my career, it was direct mail and space ads and radio. As you know, technology evolves, you know, we pretty much moved online for most things. So we're talking long copy letters, video sales letters, webinars, email sequences. So it's much more aggressive if I had to summarize the key aspect of copywriting in the traditional sense. Whereas content writing, it really does seek to take advantage of and enter the increasingly strong momentum of the proliferation of options we have as people and business owners. So in other words, we have so many more platforms out there now. There are so many incoming means of content that we have more choice than ever before. We're bumping into more sales pitches than ever before. And so therefore, naturally, we're far more jaded. We're far more educated. So therefore, we have more discernment to be able to delineate who the shysters may be or who the purveyors of better quality products may be. And so therefore, we're taking longer time to make this decision. So therefore, if you send or anybody sends a strong hard sell pitch to a person that has other options at their fingertips, that has other areas they could buy your product, or is not ready just yet, is just initially just doing their research, it's the wrong message to that particular person. That's where content comes into the mix. Where you're really looking to build trust initially, answer key questions or concerns that may be in a person's mind at a point in time that has nothing directly to do with your product just yet. And for the first time in history, we're able to actually build our own brand within a community. So, like, for example, Facebook is the most notable example of this, where it's a sensible strategy for a lot of businesses where you don't just run Facebook ads straight to the audience. what you first seek to do for a lot of businesses is produce two or three or four pieces of good, solid content and run some ads for that content and start to build your audience. Now, 5-10 years ago, this was a stupid advice, the stupidest advice you could possibly give because you run out of money by the time you build audiences. Only a big business could do it. But now because of platforms like Facebook and the incredible targeting capabilities, you can build like a mini brand. You can build a branded company just by building your own somewhat smaller audience on Facebook. Groups of individuals that start to identify with your message, with your brand, with you, etc., that you then slowly push through your funnel. And that could involve initially some very top of funnel content rich videos or articles. And those that engage with the content, they either, you know, like the video or they either click through on the article to your website, whatever it may be, then you can start to retarget those people. Then you can start to expose other advertisements further into your funnel that require a bigger commitment, which could be an invitation to a webinar, or it could be a live event, whatever form it could be. It could be coming in for an initial consultation in a dental practice. I'm not sure. It could be any number of things. But the key principle here is increasingly complex requests where you're moving them through the funnel. That's where content is greatest. It's initially building that audience, initially moving people through the funnel. And then if you start to work with really, really good content writers, and especially with our team, we have a strong copywriting background. So we understand deeper into the funnel activities, meaning that once someone has engaged with your content, with your business, to some degree with your message, understanding, well, okay, so how do we actually monetize this? And when is the right time to send them some sort of an offer? Now, content can be used for that too. And we can spend some time on how we go about it, because I think we're probably one of the few companies in the world that know this, again, because of my background. But yeah, content can be used deep into the funnel to actually monetize as well when you know what you're doing.
That's a really good point, mate. So I didn't mean to interrupt you there. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, because you've picked up a thread, and I just want to, it's a bit like a thread on a jumper, I just want to pull that thread. And that is, how quickly do you move someone through that funnel? Is there, obviously the person selects as they go through, but what velocity do you create the steps in the funnel? And how do you know? What are the signals where you're ready to put an offer in front of someone?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there are simpler and easier ways to go about this, but the core of it is you don't decide. You let the audience tell you. So you by their actions and behavior, they naturally move themselves through the funnel. So I don't know if you watched the Mark Zuckerberg hearings the other month, where he had to answer all those questions, and he kept coming back with a very, very standard response, which was, you know, we want our community to choose their experience, to choose their experience. And he kept saying that. It's an interesting, there's a lot to that, because it speaks to feedback loops. It speaks to enriching your own experience through your own actions. And that's what I suggest here. So for example, if you're producing just great content, very top of funnel, i.e. you're not selling anything, just good, doing great content, but you find, a particular user is not clicking on the message, not clicking through to the blog, not opting into your database, et cetera, then it makes no sense for that particular user to be getting hardcore pitching from you. That user should stay in an audience where they're not getting 50% off offers. This doesn't make any sense. It's a very different individual who visits, say, for example, your pricing page and sees 10 out of 20 of the last email broadcasts. That person now may require a phone call, may require an invite into the practice, some sort of a special discount offer. Now, how to do all that? Well, technically speaking, it's doable, definitely, but it's not too easy. You need a good technical team, but this is where you can set up lead scoring and tagging and your retargeting and your emails, your email autoresponders. And if you're doing follow-up phone calls and you need someone who's going to be making the phone calls, and that person needs to update the CRM with the contact record notes, and it all starts to cascade into a lot of work, but it's definitely doable. Now we take off our marketing hat and put on our operations hat.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to ask you a question around that particular funnel because I really enjoyed that process. You're absolutely right. You know, the person choosing their own experience, as Mark Zuckerberg mentioned as well. I wanted to just ask you a question because you've mentioned a couple of the little offers that you could put in, whether it's to come in for consultation or, you know, a discount of some sort or whatever. Do you have any particular thoughts around marketing to the affluent? Because a lot of the listeners on this particular show will be saying, you know, Alexia, I don't really want a discount. I don't really want to do this. But it seems that a lot of, whether it's AdWords or Facebook ads, the sort of online marketing world seems to be very offer driven. What's the workaround, or is there a workaround where you're trying to pitch to someone who you want to pay full price, but you're pitching a different experience? How would you craft an offer of that nature?
Yeah, so if we're talking about marketing to the affluent, they're a unique segment, and they're common across industries, I found. The first is convenience. They want it quick and easy. They're too damn busy. They abhor having their time wasted. It's got to be all about convenience. That's the first thing. Second thing is they're not overly price sensitive. Now, I've had debates with lots of smart people over the years, and there are definitely times when it makes sense to give them the deal, but it's about when to do it. The affluent are often good negotiators, so they need to feel they got the deal. So how you go about that requires a bit of a stage setting. I would not lead with that though. For the affluent, it's about proof. Because they can afford to spend more if they wish to spend more. This is the key. Because they can spend more if they wish, they want to know that they're getting the quality that they deserve. And so this is all about proof. Now, in the dental space, everybody's got degrees, everybody's got the track record, you've got the equipment, you've got the skill. So you have to find the next level proof that you're legally allowed to use in the space.
That's the key word, legally.
Yeah, compliance is huge in anything medical, right? So what can you use? I'm not fully up to date with the compliance aspects of dentistry.
So, mate, let's talk a little bit about your move into content as compared to copywriting. I know that, as you said, they're very close cousins and they have a different place in the marketing funnel. I wanted to ask you, obviously content comes in different forms. Our podcast is a form of content. It could be blog, could be articles, it could be videos, you know, whatever it happens to be. For small businesses who are busy in day-to-day operations, most dentists are sitting there thinking, you know, Jesse, I'm busy doing fillings, I'm busy doing endo, whatever it happens to be, you know, root canal, all those sorts of things. How do you create content quickly and easily that actually works? Is there a process to it? Have you kind of engineered out how to create content?
The answer is yes to the question. Now, if we are talking about a dentist that's busy working in the business, then the answer is going to be slightly different than for a dentist that has a capacity to design process and hire people and keep great people, etc. So, i.e. they can leverage. So why don't I answer both? So for the dentist that is stuck in the business and just for whatever reason can't reach escape velocity and really get leverage happening, the quickest and easiest is be mindful of the questions that keep popping up from the patients. Now, the questions I would imagine would vary depending on the condition and the issue that a particular patient's got, but leading with core questions is probably the most robust and best way to develop a foundation of great content. I wouldn't get too focused on, say, keywords and stuff like that. In fact, Google, as it's getting smarter and smarter every year, is moving towards natural understanding. So what it's moving towards is, it still obviously is based on keywords, but you'll see more and more that it's returning search results that are framed as questions. And what that's about is Google getting smarter and really understanding when a person types in a root canal, really understanding the intention behind root canal. And that's what we have as humans that we can infer much quicker than machines right now. And that is when someone asks a specific question, as humans, we can really start to infer what's the question behind the question. Okay, so that will be the first thing, to be very cognizant of what are the questions that are continually being asked and what's the question behind the question, and having a radar for that. So in my case, what I would do, because I'm a highly systematized individual, I have a software called Evernote on all the apps. I have Evernote on the phone, on the iPads, on the laptops, on my wife's phone, iPad. Like, there's never anywhere that I could be anywhere in the world that I can't access Evernote. And within Evernote, if I have an idea or a thought or anything at all, I capture it in a subfolder for that task. And you know what? I've never paid Evernote a dollar because I only ever need the free version, which is a classic, such a life-changing app for me. And I've never needed to upgrade because it's basic free functionality works for me. So it's not the money, it's just, it just does the job. So Evernote is a free app that I would highly suggest everyone to have that's on this podcast today. Get it on all your devices and have a folder called Patient Questions. And then when the thought arises, when you're having a shower, you're eating a meal, whatever it may be, and it's like, oh, this is a good question I keep getting asked, jot it down. Before long, here's what's going to happen. You're going to have a whole bunch of questions that are going to populate Evernote that you're going to look at and go, huh, these are great questions. There's step number one. Step number two, tell stories. So now I know in the medical space, you can't be revealing patient history without permission. And even then, there's probably a whole bunch of conditions. So tell stories and change the name. Is that that's still legal?
Yeah, that's reasonable. And you can, yeah, you just protect the identity of who it is.
Beautiful. So now what you need with all of your core questions that you know people, patients are asking, find a way to answer it using a story. And the best stories are going to be patient stories, so change the name. If you don't have a patient story, find your own story perhaps, or if you've got kids, a kid's story perhaps, something that uses story. Story is the most powerful form of communication there is. Story and metaphor, they're the two big ones. Everything else, there's those two, then there's daylight, and then you can have the other ways to communicate. And once you've identified story, third thing is, if you're short on time, you know, just record the suckers into a voice memo, have someone interview you, have one of your staff to just say, hey doc, or when someone comes in and asks you this question here, or we get lots of patients saying X, Y, and Z, how do we best answer that? What advice would you give? And just be interviewed. And once you've got the recording, get it transcribed. And you're most of the way there now. From transcription, you can get it edited. What I would do now, there are a lot of decent enough writers that are able to turn transcripts into decent articles now. So I would go to Upwork or any of the platforms that are out there and just find writers that have got success rates that are high. You'll pay 20, 30 bucks an hour, big deal, but you could have dozens and dozens of articles that will be better than most, ready to go.
Nice. And do you host, I'm assuming you host them as a blog post, or do you syndicate those out? What's your thinking about how to then distribute the content?
Yeah, so look, every business is different, but the basic, absolute basic fundamentals, it's got to go on the blog, absolutely. It's definitely got to be disseminated via email, absolutely. Those are the two minimum. And then getting them onto your social platforms is a bit extra work. It's not that much extra, but it's amazing how many clients bump into that and go, well, who's going to do that and when and all this sort of stuff and what goes on what day to which platform, and they get caught up with a whole bunch of complexity. But it's not that much work, you're right. There's software out there that automates a lot of this now, Hootsuite, Buffer, Sendable, et cetera. Now, but some platforms matter more than others. For dentistry, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'd imagine if you're uploading your patient database to Facebook and you're communicating to them also by Facebook, Facebook still allows, they're cool with it?
Facebook's really good. You can obviously create lookalike audiences for targeting purposes later and so on as well. But Facebook, like most people are on Facebook. I know younger, my daughter, who's 14, told me Facebook was for old people the other day. So perhaps that demographic or that platform will change as the demographic bubble shifts. But at the moment, Facebook is certainly the main one.
Look, I'll tell you something as well. For dentistry, because the average dollar sale can get up there, I would never in a million years forget about direct mail. Direct mail, postcards. I tell you, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but we do direct mail for our business to reach out to some of the fastest growing businesses in the country, like the CEOs of the BIW, the AFR Fast 100, et cetera. and the response rates would blow your mind. These people, if you try to reach them on LinkedIn or Facebook or phone, you would just be struggling, even with great content. These are affluent people. So what we do is we send an express post in the parcel, in the mail. Direct mail, physical mail, print it up, yes, by a human.
Yeah. I was reading a blog of Seth Godin's the other day, the mass personalization trend that he was lamenting. So, okay, it's done by a human, it's sent out, then what?
In our case or just in general?
Well, in your case and in general.
Well, in our case, look, our cut-through is pretty high. Like I wrote the copy, so you know, I sort of know what I'm doing, and we're getting 10 to 30% reply rates depending on. So yeah, it's pretty high. But look, I'm attaching a $5 note to the top of our letter. It's going in an express post parcel, and the letter is loaded with proof, and the audience is curated. So in other words, we are not just sending this to anybody. It's there's a process behind who should be receiving these letters. So it's thought through. In a dental context, obviously your direct mail are your patients. So you can segment those that have inquired but not purchased, or those that have maybe purchased but haven't spent maybe $100 or less or something, and then you've got your bigger ticket items. But I would absolutely, if I was in dentistry, I would absolutely be using direct mail, because I would imagine for the most part, apart from maybe reminders that you've got to come in and get your checkup, direct mail is not strategically used in most dental practices, right?
No, not at all. So let me ask you a quick question, because I know you don't want to go down the direct mail rabbit hole, but I just want to go a little bit into the hole, because you mentioned sending direct mail to segmenting your patient base and direct mailing based on different behavioral attributes. What about to direct mail to people who have not been into your practice at all? Would you consider purchasing a list and trying to segment that accordingly, or how would you try to generate new business, as in new patients, with direct mail? Any tips or tricks around that?
Well, look, how I would first think about it is, now putting compliance guidelines to the side for the moment.
Yeah. Assuming we can do everything we want to do, then let's just put that aside. Yeah.
Okay. So how I think this stuff through is, I think in principles. And so one of the core principles that pervade everything that we do is lifetime value. What is a run-of-the-mill, good, decent patient worth in revenue for the first year? What are they worth for the second year if we perform and do a great job and stay in contact? And maybe what are they worth in the third year?
Yeah, retention maths.
The retention would be huge on dentistry, right? If you're a good dentist, I don't bounce dentists.
No, retention is massive, mate.
All right, good. So I'd be first thinking those terms, and not, because I've worked with dentists over the years, and this is a common mistake, they think in terms of that first transaction. I know we can't lose money on that first transaction. How do I build my practice? Well, you treat ethically, morally, you treat that patient as an annuity. They're going to come back. Look after them. They're going to bring the kids. They're going to bring the wife, the husband, etc. Do a great job. But your job initially is to build trust.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I would first think. And then I'd start to dig into and really look at, okay, so where is the core of my base? Is it a 5-kilometer radius from the practice? Is it 10Ks, 7.5Ks, etc.? Who is in the radius? Are there a lot of businesses? Is it all residential? What's the nature of the residential? Who are the demographics? What are the, you know, et cetera? I really do a deep dive and understand who my audience is. And that would start to dictate the sort of offerings that I would do to get potential patients in the door. And that's the offer-driven side of things. You could do content. You could do reports. You could do guides. Again, it stems out of understanding the local audience. So it was one dentist we worked with years ago that was in a really good location. And of all things that pulled in the business, it was his sandwich board out the front. Because 50% of his walk-ins, of his new clients, was a sandwich board. So I said, awesome. So, doc, what have you tried on the sandwich board? Because what do you mean? So what have you tested? Because nothing. We just have our branding, our company name, and you're welcome. So, really? And 50% of your business, your new business, is from the sandwich board? Because, yeah. Oh, okay. Well, you need to be testing different things. So that was an obvious area to focus on, because it was 50% of the business. whether it's a complementary tooth, teeth whitening, whatever it may be. Again, what's dictated is the local area demographics in terms of the offering that would be made. It could be some sort of a evening, some sort of a two-hour presentation of some sort. I'm not sure. It varies. It really does. It comes out of the audience understanding, to be honest.
Mate, that is absolute gold. There is so much there that for people listening, just hit pause, rewind, make sure you go back and just take some really hardcore notes on what Alexis has shared there, because that is just marketing genius right there. And I can tell you that no one I know really does this very well. So thank you, Alexis. That is really, really practical and really, really useful. Mate, I want to talk a little bit about your process for content. We spoke about questions and going through that. We haven't really touched on the different types of content, whether it's audio, written, or video, or whatever. Do you find that there is a way of determining which kind of content to use? Or is it, again, is it coming back to what you said earlier? Is it about knowing your audience, doing the demographics, and figuring it out from there?
Yeah, I think there are two forms that you really can't avoid. First is text-based. I think you can't avoid that, emails, articles, etc. So definitely there's one, text, and the second would have to be video, especially in dental as well. It's such a highly visual. There are so many transformative before and afters that you can do, assuming compliance possibilities. If I have a false force to pick two, it's text and video. Now, text is easier than video for most companies. It depends who we're talking to. Those companies and individuals that enjoy presenting on video, then it's really easy for them because they fire up their iPhone and just have the selfie stick or stick their hand out in front of their face and talk.
Where they go?
Well, with the quality of cameras nowadays, it's not shoddy anymore. It really isn't. As long as your lighting's okay, you could definitely, for most situations, do a good enough job that you can still engage with people. And I tell you something, for top of funnel activities, and just to define that again, not selling stuff, building trust, building your audience, in a dental context, a selfie video could be perfect.
Behind the scenes, yeah.
Yeah, meet the dentist. Like, we walk you through the clinic, meet the team. This is all human to human stuff that is hugely important because it builds trust.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So, Lexi, you know, one of the things around content creation, of course, is regularity, consistency. Rather than sending one piece of content every two and a half years, you know, we need to have some sort of consistency. How is it that you create that consistency, you know, whether it's a calendar, or what's your process, A, for mapping out the consistency, making sure you deliver, and then, of course, creating the content itself in a way that's efficient and effective?
Again, we have process. So, you know, a standard client for us, maybe we do 5 articles a month every month. And from those articles, we may produce a couple of videos for them and social posts for Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn and et cetera, et cetera. It all goes into a schedule and a spreadsheet. So in our case, what we do is once we jump on the strategy call and map out the core issues and questions and so on for a particular audience, we then use that as the base to map out, okay, so for month one, we're doing 5 articles for you. What are the core topics we should be hitting on? And month one, it could focus on, it varies from client to client, but we get very specific and say, article number one is going to be on subject A. Article number two is going to be on subject B. And then we do that for the first 5 articles. We get clear on the subjects. And then we get a bit deeper on the strategy call and say, what are the points that we absolutely must hit on? And we'll do just 2 to 3 points just to help brief the writers out later on. Here are 2 to 3 points that we really need to do hit on for this particular topic. And then we'll ask, what are the points to avoid? What must we not say? And traditionally, it could be something around medical compliance in this context, or it could be make sure you don't talk about this other thing, or whatever it may be. So we just drop that down as well. And then if we're talking top of funnel, most notably, we'll ask, do you have a patient story here? Do you have a case study that we can frame this context in? And if a particular client does not have the stories, we start to delve into and really work out, well, can we get the stories? Is it possible? Are you willing to do it? It will elevate the content big in a really, really meaningful way. And, you know, that's where we start to assess, and it's subjective. If a client says, look, absolutely no, not going to do it, then we find another way. But most clients say, look, if it's going to improve the content, let's do it. And we have a process for that too that makes it not painless, but almost painless to get those case studies. And so we build it out bit by bit. So those five articles at the end of that call, for example, we've built out what the subject's going to be, what the outline roughly needs to be, what we need to avoid, and if there's going to be a case study applied to it. And then it gets assigned to the writers. They go do their research. And if the client wants to approve outlines, we send them the outlines. If they just want us to go ahead and write the content, we go and write the content. And month two is pivot time. That's where we get feedback from the client as to their preferences and unique language patterns that they would like to refine and adjust for. And usually by end of month two, we've really dialed in content that the audience really wants. We've integrated stories and proof and narratives that get engagement. If it's appropriate, we have call to actions at the end. Could be for a free report opt-in, it could be for a consultation, whatever it may be. And we just repeat the process month in, month out. And from there, we strip the content and create social posts for the different social platforms. Once they get approved, they get onto the design team who go and turn them into beautiful looking social posts that get amplified on the platforms. They get put into a calendar. Specifically, this particular post goes on this day to this platform, and this particular post goes on, and we just use a spreadsheet for that, that maps out, you know, each day of the month. Just nut it out. It's not difficult work. It's nitty gritty work.
Yeah. But the devil is in the detail, and getting that detail right is critically important. Hey, Alexi, do you have any resources on your website that listeners from this show could just have a look at to get an idea of what that might look like?
Yeah, so we've reverse engineered and just revealed much of how we do a lot of this stuff, and I have to put it into a webinar basically. So if our listeners went to our website fubi.co/webinar, that's F for Fred, U for umbrella, B for Bob, I for Indigo, .co/webinar. That's loaded with content. There's an email sequence behind that is absolutely loaded with content. And, you know, it's like I said, we've literally opened up our process and how we do a lot of this stuff at the granular level.
Yeah. Well, mate, I've, as I said, been following your work now for at least 6, 7, 8 years now. And the detail and the thinking and the strategy behind your work is really, really clever. And so for anyone who is listening to the podcast right now, I'd say head across and have a look at that webinar, because I guarantee you everything we've spoken about today is obviously really fascinating, really interesting, but the detail and the nuts and bolts behind what we're speaking about will be in that webinar, and I really commend it to you. Alexi, you've been incredibly generous with your time today, mate. I'm very grateful to you. Mate, if we were to wrap up and just leave our listeners with, you know, one or two tips or pieces of advice that have come out of today's show, what would be a couple of things that you'd really recommend for the audience to really kind of sink their teeth into, no pun intended?
Okay, yeah. So if I was a dentist, and let's say I just decided to become a dentist and I wanted to really grow the practice, the first thing would be knowing where the future is heading with platforms and media. Authenticity is huge. So I would be doing lots of selfie videos of the team, the clinic, behind the scenes, and just human to human. That would be the first thing that I would be doing. Second thing I'd be doing is I'd be making a concerted effort to be building up my proof. And there's many different types of proof. Great content is one of them, but there's many other forms. And that's where it leads me on to the ophthalmologist that I mentioned earlier, who's a client of ours from a long while back. His name is Dr. Brian Boxer Wachler. So let me spell that because it's unusual. B-O-X-E-R. W-A-C-H-L-E-R. And he's the ophthalmologist to ophthalmologist out in Beverly Hills, California. And if you just go to his website, spend some time on there, you're going to see that, and he has, by the way, celebrity clients, so he sells to the affluent. You're going to see how he goes about really building the proof, you know, creating that authenticity. And it's probably one of the best examples I've ever come across of a medical professional that does our style of marketing in a very professional and effective manner. So that would be my second advice, is go check him out, because via example, a concrete example, he typifies many of the elements that would take me quite a while to explain over a podcast.
Yeah, no worries. And we'll put the URL to that website in our show notes as well. So check it out. I'm actually looking at the website now. It's very clever, really clever. Mm. It's elegant. Hey, Alexi, thank you once again. I'm very grateful to you for taking the time today to come and hang with us. And as I said earlier, everything that you've shared has been absolute gold and really practical, really useful content. And so from all of us here at the Savvy Dentist Podcast, mate, thank you. Really appreciate it and look forward to catching up soon, mate. You're a gem.
Thank you, sir.
Cheers, mate. Hey guys, Jesse Green here. I really hope you enjoyed that masterclass of content writing and copywriting with Alexi Nikolaos. He is so good at what he does, and I'm sure that you've got a page of notes ready to implement. As always, make sure you take action on those notes because it is the action that creates the change. So I also wanted to let you know about our Facebook group, the Savvy Dentist Facebook group, which is the companion Facebook group to this particular podcast. It's where we share tips, tools, trainings, and techniques to help you grow your practice. It really is a business school for dentists, and we'd love to see you there as well. It is a free Facebook group open to dentists only. And of course, all you need to do to join us is head across to drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And that'll take you straight there. So we look forward to seeing you there. But in the meantime, take good care, have a great week, and we'll see you on the flip side. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.